Okay, as I was saying, these agents don't have a clue as to what they're doing. And so what we want to do is make sure, and our whole program is based upon being passively aggressive. In other words, we passively go out and we passively teach people how to get this information. And Congress says we can't have this information. Now, we want to touch on just a couple more items here briefly. Now, if you're having a problem with the IRS, you might want to go down to your local IRS office, wherever it may be, and ask for your IMFOLT. That's Individual Master File Online Transcript. And it's available at any IRS office anywhere in the country. No matter where you are, you can walk in and request a copy of it. And it will be updated, current. So you can walk right in the office. Now, what they're going to do, they're going to try to make you sign sometimes a form. Well, the form they want you to sign is only to get a copy of a back year, a former year 1040. No, don't need to sign this. All we need to do, and sometimes they'll make you fill out a little slip so they can take it back and put it in their computer so they know your name and account number. So they pull up the right file. So this is one of the items that you can do. Now, what we tell them is that when they request, how did you find out about this? My congressman told me about it. He asked me to come down here and get this. And that's the truth. My congressman did tell me about this and did tell me that it was available. So, and also besides the IMFOLT, you have another document they have in their computer called a tax module. You can also request a tax module. Then you can also request a taxpayer's transcript of account. You can ask for that document, and also you can try and get, and it gets a little bit more difficult sometimes, you can get your MDISA file, A-M-D-I-S-A. Now, I've had some doing this across the country and getting feedback, and we've had several places where the people at the window will go back and pull these files up, and then they'll get a black ink pen, and they will take and start marking things out on your file. Whoa! Where's your delegated authority to do this? I want a clear copy, or I want your name so I can turn you in to Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration or Internal Affairs or somebody, because where's your delegated authority? This is an online transcript. You have no authority to block anything off my file. And matter of fact, if you get your regular IMF back and it has certain documents blacked out on it, go immediately down to the local IRS office and ask for your IMFOLT, and they'll probably give it to you without those items being blacked out on it. So, and if that office won't do it, drive to another office. Then drive to another office. I mean, I get people call me up, well, I went down there and they wouldn't give it to me. Like Mount Vernon, Illinois or someplace. They wouldn't give me my IMFOLT. Drive over to Springfield. Walk into Springfield, Illinois. Here you go, sir. Anything else we can do for you?
We had one guy that did 11 FOIAs for the same year for the same document. He got 11 different answers. And every one would exonerate him.
That's correct. So, you know, you got to be a little bit persistent. You just can't, you know, well, he wouldn't send me it, and I guess I can't do it this way. You got to be a little bit persistent, a little bit resilient, and a little bit savvy to do this. And this, you know, boggles my mind. People call in and start whining about how they went in the office and they wouldn't give it to them. Big deal. You don't have to argue with them. Go someplace else and get it. I mean, it's just being passively aggressive. And by being passive, you're getting all these FOIA requests. Then by being aggressively start putting them back in if they've been doing mean, nasty things to you, documenting the fraud, and then you have a chance to go after them.
About a week ago, we had someone that couldn't get there. They were taking him to a court to an appeals, and he wanted that information. He had FOIA'd it in advance. They would not give him the information. He insisted. He finally got the number in Washington, D.C. of the the head honcho office of the Freedom of Information Act request, and what do you know? The next day they called him and said, yes, we're making it available. We'll get it to you as soon as we can.
You know, see, these are local people who are making decisions on items they have no business to be making. And they think they're all powerful, But when you call them on it, all of a sudden they don't have the power or authority they thought they did. And it really blows them apart. I mean, you really ruin their day.
Yes, it goes from, you know, do I have to help you to yes, sir, what can I do for you when they get a phone call from D.C. wanting to know what they're doing.
What's the problem?
Yeah, we don't need problems.
Okay, now, go ahead, Larry.
Okay, so I'm going to take a look. I've got in front of me a decoded IMF. The action. When we decoded IMF, we put the original paper all redlined so you can see we do several things. Let me back up for a second. We put in a spreadsheet so we can put down each docket locator number and identify what that is, what the blocking numbers are, what the transaction code is, and so forth. The original IMF that comes, 1, 2, 3, or 5 sheets, whatever it is, we also put red lines on it to mark what all these items are. And for example, just on the front page of an IMF, the first thing we'll have is whether or not that person is a tax protester, because that's right in your IMF. The tax year, the type of tax, a specific master file in this case, the mail filing requirements, what are those? We got one the other day that was a 13. It was MFR 13, mail filing requirement 13, which is not an IMF. It's a BMF. But how would you know that unless you got it, unless you asked for it? And it was on an IMF form. These are the kind of things that they do. That's totally illegal. There's no way they can justify that. But they're using BMF numbers on an IMF.
It's misrepresentation.
It's misrepresentation. The next thing is they have something called the VAL number, and it's usually 1. And the VAL number means the Social Security number, IMF is not valid for the taxpayer using it. Almost everybody has that one. So it means the number you're using is not valid for you. Why do you suppose that is? That's a good question right now. I'll give you an answer later. Is there criminal activity indicated? Is there a freeze code? They have freeze codes that they put in, and you can find out where those are. But the freeze codes will... Some of them will freeze the module so that no more changes can take place, and it usually only happens when there's criminal investigation or a prosecution is moving forward. And then, is there a criminal investigation indicated? There's a place on that for the IMF. And this may surprise you, every IMF has a lien on it. There's a lien and a lien number. It has a docket locator number. A docket locator number starts with 5 digits and then 3 digits in the center, then another 5 digits and a single digit after it. The single digit at the very end is the year it was added. And for this one, this was the year 1996. This lien was added in 1997 because the last digit was a 7. But anyway, the docket locator, we FOIA that. We make sure we FOIA that. In some cases, there's a simple freeze code. In this, the one I've got in front of me, there's a dash L, which means an Ames indicator, and it was selected for audit. There was an audit taking place.
Let me interrupt for a minute, Larry, and clarify something here. Now, these document locator numbers on your IMF, you will never know that these items are placed on there if you do not get your IMF in the first place.
That's right.
And there's groups and people telling you not to do this, you don't need to do this, this is voodooism. I'd be very suspect of anybody who told me that. And I've been doing this stuff for 15 years, and I've heard a bunch of stories out there. And we have had so many wins here in this office in the past couple of years, it's unbelievable. It's all based upon administrative procedures and doing this type of work.
And using the government's paperwork to defend yourself.
Yes.
Because it will exonerate you.
And most of the stuff you hear in the Patriot community, you just do the reverse of what you hear. The reverse is true. Go ahead, Larry.
Okay. The next item that it shows is, there's 3 items together. We circle this, and this is a number 10, but it's a CSED. That's Collection Statute Expiration Date. Would you like to know what that is for that year? What was their expiration date? And then the refund statute expiration date. And finally, the assessment statute expiration date. And let me tell you something about that. That assessment, you think you if you weren't assessed last year, for last year, you're not going to be assessed for that year in the future? Oh, yes. They could do that, and they do it all the time. They'll assess you 2 or 3 years after the fact, 5 or 6 years after the fact. In fact, in one of them, we found a place where they had taken old years, I think that was sometime in the 70s up through the sometime in the 80s, and rolled it all over and put it into a new assessment in a new year. They're allowed to do that. There's no procedure for that, but they do it.
And they get away with it because nobody knows how to look this stuff up.
No one knows how to challenge it. It's very straightforward. And if you ask them for their authority to do that, they don't have it. That's what you have to understand. Then finally, the assessment date, the docket locator number for that assessment that was made, whether you filed or whether they put in the substitute for return. And then finally, the total income tax reported there and the adjusted gross income for you. Now, that's all just on the front page. That doesn't start to break down the transaction codes and the other things that are happening, the mean and nasty things that they like to do to you. So this gives you is intended to give you a feel for what is on that IMF and what is an IMF. And let me mention one other thing. Richard had talked earlier about an AMDISA file, the AMDISA file. And normally when we FOIA an AMDISA, we think we're going to get back a one page. Well, apparently there's some confusion as of late. Several people have gotten back huge files asking for an AMDISA file, almost everything that's ever happened. And what we found at that one page, you might want to call that a transcript. But if they'll give you the file, that's great. FOIA the file and FOIA the transcript both. That's not a problem. But anyway, apparently the one page that we're used to seeing, and the reason that's important is because it shows the activity code, the taxable activity that they have you in. Income tax is not mandatory, it is voluntary. So how can they come after you and demand if it's voluntary? Because they change it. They change it over to a taxable activity.
Excise
tax.
Yes.
And so that's how they do that. And that anytime you have a freeze code, you know immediately. You need to do that to FOIA that AMDISA file and find out what kind of excise taxable activity they have you in, and you'll be surprised because they'll be making pistols and revolvers or bus and chassis manufacturer or underground coal miner, things that you've never heard of. Why are they saying you're doing that? Well, I'll tell you why. So they can collect the tax, and that tax is mandatory. They have rules to go after that tax. Anybody who's involved in that activity. And they've said you're involved in it.
They have put you in a regulated industry, and that's how they're going after you.
So that's really the basis of how they come after people for taxes. That's the basis of how they do seizures for property and everything. They have to put you in one of these activities. Would you like to know what activity you're involved in if they're after you? Or would you like to be able to ask that agent, hey, I'm not an underground coal miner. Where did you get that idea? How about sending something out to the sheriff, to your local sheriff, saying, hey, they think I'm a pistol and revolver manufacturer, but I don't even know how a gun works. And they've got these charges against you. I want to let you know now that if they come after me, and they're coming after me for this, you got a problem here in this county. You need to get them straightened out or question them about that.
Now, one of the most incredible things they do is they label people as high-level drug dealers and to be considered armed and dangerous on their IMS.
Yeah, and wouldn't you like to take that to your local sheriff and say, Sheriff, honest to goodness, I'm here and I haven't done any of that. I need
Somebody
your protection.
Somebody has falsified my file.
Yes.
Inside the IRS. Who and for what purposes? Who falsified my file and for what purposes did they falsify my file for?
You see, if they have to follow due process, they have to show how they falsified that and who it was that falsified it, because he's responsible now for a fraud. Now you're getting... I'm not going to suggest you sue him for fraud, but you sure can stop him. Go ahead.
Okay, on the freeze code that Larry talked about, there'll be a T code posted. to show that you're in some kind of narcotics activity, and usually in violation of the U.S.-UK tax treaty, which is narcotics activity, which we go through in our levels 1 and 2 courses. Then also, they'll have a 26 stat code posted on the last page of your IMF that will be related to this entity. So we also decode this. We've been talking about document locator numbers, but we also decode the stat codes.
Yeah, and let me tell you about, for example, the freeze codes that we talked about, the law enforcement manual. Law enforcement manual 3 is what I use, and it has them all listed in there. So we take their verbiage and put in this report. They have a hard time getting around that.
A very hard time.
And the stat codes. We have the list of stat codes, and the stat codes have come right out of the ADP manual, the 6209. And I use that in there. That they have a hard time stopping this stuff because it's their words, it's their manuals, and it's their process. They don't know how to follow it. Doesn't mean you can't learn what it is that they're doing.
Okay, let's say you're having a problem with the IRS. They send you a CP 515 or a notice of deficiency or a CP 518 letter. Now, when we rebut these letters, what we do, if we have your decoded IMF, we will include it in as a main exhibit as exonerating you from what they're sending you, because the CP 515, 518, CP 504 are only for BMS only. So what they do is they take, like Larry was saying, they take your IMF form and they post on it BMF, Business Master File Activities. Now, you will not have a BMF file, because they take your IMF file and they put these Business Master File postings on it to validate the excise taxable activity they're trying to stick you with. Now, as Gary can here tell you on the rebuttal paper, how strong it is when we wrap that IMF, decoded IMF, inside that rebuttal paperwork, what happens, Gary?
Well, one, a lot of times they don't respond to it in the beginning of the process, because the one thing you have to remember through this process is...
Take your back. You're mumbling.
I am?
Yeah. Again.
One of the things that you have to remember in the process is when you receive your 503 letter, whatever it is, 515, 518, it is computer generated. When you receive that letter and you rebut it, and you have to rebut it, even though someone that has any so-called brains will never see it, because the computer operator, all they know is when it comes in, either it has a return attached to it or it has a check attached to it, and if it's not there, gosh, they're trained, like trained monkeys, to push a certain button. When they push the button, the next computer-generated letter now gets spit out and sent to you. But you have to rebut, because you're going to have to do that until you get a human being involved in it. And at that point, you start the process of trying to take back your life with your IMF and all the documents. But through the whole process, you're building your file. And you have to build your file, because that's the only thing you have that will exonerate you.
How many thousands of times have we done this for people across the country?
Thousands.
We've done this thousands of times, and a lot of people have been very successful in this route. But every once in a while, we get somebody who goes off into a different tangent because, $5,000, and we do you a 70-page letter. It takes care of all your problems, or some other silly nonsense. And I'm sorry to say, but it does not. Has we ever seen any of that help them yet?
No. Everybody's out there looking for a silver bullet. There is no silver bullet. It doesn't exist. You got to keep shooting one little lead one at a time. And you just keep, again, passive aggressive. Just keep, the water dripping in the sink. It's not a big deal. But then when you go to bed at night, sink's dripping in the cup. In the morning when you get up, the cup is full from those little drops. There you go. That's what happens to your file. But sending one letter will not do it. The silver bullet will not work.
We have not seen it yet, and we know people who's paid $20,000 or more. Unbelievable. It is absolutely unbelievable, some of the stuff that people fall into. Of course, it sounds good. We have people tell me, it sounded good at the time. But anyway, this is the whole basis. Now, this tape here is designed to deal mostly with the IMF. But however, there's other documents such as the 23Cs, assessment certificate. There's the 5734 form, which is a non-master file assessment voucher, which is the form they're going to have to assess penalties and interest on. There is the 813 form, which lists your debits and credits on a separate form, Matt, which is then used to create a official Internal Revenue Service non-master file transcript. And so that's a whole other entity unto itself, is a non-master file. And as their own 5400 manual says, there is no liability until there is a official Internal Revenue Service non-master file transcript, because a non-master file is the actual liability transcript, not the IMF. Now, you also have another one called the EPMF, Employee Plans Master File. And so they just take all these different little files and they falsify all the codes all over the place and they use them against you. And when you go to court, if they take you to court, then we get people all the time who are call us up and first time we've ever hear from them and, well, I just got convicted this morning. Is there anything you can do for me? Or I got to go to trial at 9 o'clock this morning. I mean, it's unbelievable some of the calls we get into this office. It's absolutely horrendous. But what we like to do is get this information out to people and let them start doing a FOIA request before they have any trouble whatsoever. Then you get your FOIA request, you get your IMF and other files in before they falsify them. There are certain things you can ask for, and then you can compare it. Now, compare them. Now, if you're having problems with the IRS, we highly suggest that you get a new IMF file at least once every quarter, if not every month. What? Yes. Well, I got one 2 years ago. Well, okay, like Larry said, things change. And they change on a continuing basis. And if you're monitoring your file, which is just simply a one-page request with a notary statement to it, you'll soon start catching how they do this and how they start changing your file. And it's not an overnight thing. It's not an overnight process they do to us. It's over a 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5, 6 year time frame. I mean, we get people who call us up and they get indicted for 1992 or 1993 for something. They said, well, I haven't heard from the IRS for 5 years, and all of a sudden a U.S. Marshal comes out and hands me an indictment. I mean, it's unbelievable. And yeah. So then people call us up in a panic, and now we're working behind the eight ball, where you could have took in charge of this. You could always learn the process how to do this.
I guess another way to state that is the IRS is very proactive in trying to put things in your file that they can collect money on. You have to be proactive in building your file to stop them. And the best of all wins is when you never go to court and they just stop bothering you because they've seen the size of your file. They aren't going to fool with you anymore. That's the best win. And that's where we'd like to see everybody go. Doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, we don't guarantee anything.
That's right.
Yeah, because we're not dealing with law. We're dealing with administrative equity procedures, and these people that we deal with, the agents, the prosecutors, and the judges, simply do not know the law.
That's right.
They don't even know the procedure half the time.
That's correct.
You can send a letter in showing them the exact procedure, lay it out for them, explain it to them, attach the Brandeis briefs the way we do it, and show them specifically what they are supposed to do to fulfill their job, which exonerates you, by the way, and they won't do it. They go, oh, that isn't what that says. Well, gee whiz.
What does it say?
What does it say then? If it doesn't say what I just read, then what does it say? Are you telling me red really means blue and orange is really yellow? What are you saying here? And they can't answer you, but they want to circumvent the system. Because if they don't circumvent the system, they cannot get a win. You know, they got to have the feather put in their cap. They want that feather.
Now, another thing we get is people call us all the time and say, well, you got the lien or levy removed for so-and-so, and I want you to do the same thing for us, but they don't want to, I don't want to do that IMS stuff. I just want the lien or levy removed. Well, there's got to be a little understanding here, ladies and gentlemen, that there's a basic step-by-step process, like Gary said, the water dripping into the glass. I mean, it's not an overnight process. None of us sitting here have ever said we have a magic wand and we don't guarantee anything, but however, here's what can happen, and I have never seen anything, I think Larry can verify, Gary, we have never seen anybody going to jail or prison over asking a simple FOIA request.
That's right.
Now, there are some people on the other side of the coin used to work for the IRS or U.S. Attorney's Office, who we have found have falsified documents, who are no longer working for the government or for the IRS. So it can have awful. You can also reverse the situation, and then you can also have a very valid complaint with Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. And I get people all the time who call me up or come to me and say, well, I'm going to file a complaint. I want to file one of those complaints. Okay, well, what documents do you have? Well, they sent me this letter. They sent me that letter. Well, let me see your FOIA request. Well, I haven't done any. I just want to file a complaint. Sorry, that's not going to work. If you don't have documented evidence of due process violations, don't even waste your time trying to file a complaint. Just because she came out to my house and she was all nasty and mean to me. That's not going to make it. Sorry.
You need more than that. You have to have the documented evidence of what they did or what they misrepresented to you or could not produce to prove their case. They're very big at you proving your case, but just remember, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. They got to prove their case. And if you get the documents and you have them in front of you and you know what they say, hey, you exonerate yourself, and they cannot rebut it.
Yes, there is no rebuttal. Now, you're building a file against them. Now, they've been working for a number of years, probably, to build a file against you. And you've been helping them. Unknowingly, you've been helping them. But, however, you can stop that silly process and reverse it, and you start building your file against them. Now, what could be any better than that? I don't know. We've had win after win. We've had criminal indictments. We've stopped. We've had people who have actually been noticed that they're going to be indicted. Have they ever been indicted yet that we worked
no.
on?
No.
No. No. And so this is the power of what we're trying to teach you here about the basics of the individual master file or the business master file, which we haven't really talked about a whole lot about because we don't get too many of those coming in. It's mostly people with individual master file problems. And now what the IRS likes to go after is people making $25,000 a year or less, because those are the ones that 88.8% of the audits are against. Because why? They know that people making $25,000 a year or less do not have the ability to really put up a decent defense. And that's who they come after, low income. We see it all the time. Most of these people are very hard workers, and they just get ransacked.
Well, and you got to also remember what's low income. That's also a lot of the elderly.
Yes.
Who don't even understand what's happening to them. They talk about the boiler room operations and these mail order deals to old people where they say, here, we're going to help you. You send us a check for $5,000 because we found money for you. You hear them on the news all the time about this. Well, this is basically what the IRS is doing to these old people. They're sending them.
Okay, well, we're out of time on this tape, so we hope this has been a benefit to you and answered some of your questions about the IMF itself. And so we hope you are successful in your fight against one of the more abusive agencies of this country. Good luck.